All right. So I think we have 50 minutes left in the session, if I understand right. Is that correct? Yep. Okay. So let's go for another 20 minutes and then we'll take a couple more questions. All right. I have to start a timer in front of me, otherwise I get lost. All right. And hopefully everybody can see this screen. So like I said, I've got about 10 slides left. We'll try and get through these. And this is more of my own personal experience, strength and hope. When I started with my sponsor, I realized how much he modeled good boundaries with me. So when I first called him, he said to me, "Ian, I'm happy to be your sponsor. I just want you to know, here are my boundaries around phone calls. I want you to call me anytime you need to talk to me. Your job is to call me, not guess whether it's convenient for me, whether I'll want to talk to you or not. Your job is to pick up the phone and call. My job," he said, "is to tell you whether this is a good time for me or not. And if it's not a good time for me, I will tell you when I will call you back. Can we agree that that's how we're going to behave in this relationship?" So for me, that was an example of modeling good boundaries, right? He told me what was acceptable, what wasn't. He was encouraging me to call him and to not second guess whether it would be convenient for him or not. And I use the same approach with my sponsees. I went through this with somebody yesterday, where I was telling them, "Your job is to call me when you're struggling and you don't know what to do next. My job is to tell you whether it's a good time or not. Don't second guess me." Right? And it just reinforces that beginning of learning boundaries. Sponsors are very good. They tend to be very good at teaching us more about boundaries. And it's an important relationship, and it's a safe relationship, which is it's good to have a safe relationship where you can start learning boundaries. I learned, and I was taught, to start with baby boundaries, because our codependency is really strong, and setting boundaries is like tackling your codependency head on, and your codependency is going to react by trying to get you to not set that boundary. So if you start with baby boundaries, you get a much smaller reaction to it. So when the phone rings at supper time, don't answer the phone. That's a little boundary. You don't even look to see who's calling. Just don't answer it. In fact, to make it easier for myself, I took off my name display so that I wouldn't be tempted depending on who was on the call. I just decided I wasn't going to answer the call. If you do decide that you're going to answer a call later during the day and it's a telephone solicitor, just learn to politely say, "No thanks, that's not going to work for me," and hang up. Don't engage in a conversation. Don't be rude at the beginning to get them off. Just practice. Practice setting a boundary. "Sorry, I haven't got time right now and I'm not interested. I'm going to hang up now," and then just hang up. If somebody comes to the door, well, these days people don't tend to come to the door in Canada because of COVID. I mean, I don't get people coming to my door very often anymore. But used to be that was another place where if I wanted to up the level of my boundaries, I would, the people who came to my door who had literature they wanted me to take, I would start setting boundaries with them in a very polite way. And just say, "Sorry, I'm not interested." As opposed to not answering the door or appearing angry or anything like that. I just tried in a very dignified way to just say, "No, here's my boundary. No, thanks." One of the things I did learn though was to expect fear, guilt, and maybe even shame when I start setting boundaries. And the more important the relationship, the more fear, the more guilt, the more shame. I had to set a very significant relationship with my ex-spouse over access to my kids. And I actually had to go to counseling. I don't know how many sessions we did on it, 5 or 6, because I needed that much help before I could set the boundary. It was very early in recovery for me, and I couldn't have done it. And in fact, I arranged to see the counselor, talk to the counselor, I talked to my sponsor, set the boundary, talk to my sponsor again afterwards, and then talk to my counselor again afterwards, because I needed that support. So if you do need support, learning to do boundaries is like recovery. And remember, that's a burden. We need help with those things. So it's okay to ask for help. All right, next slide. Oh, just got to make sure I didn't skip over one here. Okay. Something else I started to learn is I needed to value me and what was important to me. When we get into recovery, we have very low self-esteem. Most people would say they have no self-esteem. They have self-hatred. And for me, that came from this place, this unfounded but deep-seated belief that there was something fundamentally flawed with me. And if you knew me well enough, you'd see that I was fundamentally flawed and you'd reject me. In order to set boundaries, I needed to say, I'm worth it. It's worth it for me to protect myself more than I have been, because I don't deserve to be treated that way. My home group, my program, my sponsor taught me that I was all acceptable and even lovable the way I was. And I needed to start seeing myself that way too. And once I started to see myself that way, I wanted to set boundaries more to protect me, my time, and you know, my values. So it's kind of a behavior. If you get stronger in your self-esteem, you will want to set more boundaries. As you set more boundaries and it becomes easier, you grow in self-esteem. If you've been in CODA for a while, I think we all understand that in recovery, we need to learn to love ourselves before we can love somebody else healthy in a healthy and loving way, right? If we don't love ourselves, then we're using other people to get our need for love met, but we're doing it through manipulation, not because of the freedom to love, right? I can't expect healthy, loving relationships unless I can love myself first. And I learn how to do that because my group accepts me and loves me. My higher power accepts me and loves me. Maybe I can try to start doing that too. And one of the ways I love myself is through self-care and setting healthy boundaries. So it's really important to realize that those are the self-esteem, self-care, healthy boundaries are all linked. A question I've learned to ask myself before setting a boundary is, how important is it? Sometimes the answer is, it's extremely important. Other times I realize, no, it's not that important. And then I can set a boundary that has appropriate consequences by asking myself that. The other question I always ask myself is, what's the worst thing that can happen when I set this boundary? And can I live with it? If I realize I need to set a boundary with somebody who's very important to me, and I understand that the worst thing that can happen is that they won't speak to me again, now I can evaluate the need to set the boundary based on that. Okay, this relationship is really getting bad. I need to set this boundary. If I lose the relationship, can I live with that? Yes, I can. Okay. So now that I've evaluated that, that frees me from some of the fear and allows me to go ahead and set the boundary. I've also learned that setting a boundary, it's not a boundary unless there's a consequence. And as my sponsor put it, if you set a boundary without consequences, really all you're doing is you're setting yourself up for a failed preference, right? I would prefer it to be this way, but oh well, it isn't. The consequences are necessary. If you set a boundary with somebody and they violate your boundary and there's no consequence, you're just teaching them that they can do whatever they want, right? So that's why it's important to have consequences. And you will be tempted to back down. Things always got worse for me when I tried to set a boundary and back down on the consequences, because what I was doing was I was teaching other people how to treat me. And I was teaching them to disrespect my boundaries. So then I had to find the strength to set an even firmer boundary, which was harder. And they tried harder to break that boundary. when we're in a relationship with somebody and we start setting boundaries, we're changing the rules in the relationship. And people will react to that. They don't understand. They know something's changed. And they will try harder if they're a controlling person to push back and get you to behave the way you've always behaved in the past. Just realize that this will happen and be firm with your consequences. Doesn't mean you have to get mean and angry, but if you expect that you're going to receive pushback, just remind them of what the consequence is. I know you feel uncomfortable. I am setting this boundary in our relationship. I need to do that to protect me. If you can't honor that relationship or that boundary, then our relationship is over. But feel free to set your own boundaries with me. That's important. Boundaries are so important that I need to let you set your boundaries too. So maybe you want to think about which ones you want to set. Just remember, boundaries need practice. Expect that you're going to make mistakes. Expect you're going to receive some pushback, and get support with that. As I said, boundaries change the rules in the relationship. And because of that, people won't know how to react to you sometimes. But if you use your boundaries in healthy ways, people will learn to respect them and won't feel threatened by the fact that you're setting them. And just remember, you can't use boundaries to control other people. You can only use boundaries to defend yourself. I can't force somebody to obey my boundary, to recognize my boundary. All I can do is make it clear to them where it is and what the consequence is. And it's really great to allow others to set boundaries with you and to invite them to do that, that it's a two-way street. Because in a relationship, you both need to explain where your boundaries are, to make that connection, to make it safe, to allow for more intimacy and more risk. I mean, those are the things that make the relationship deeper. If there is no risk in the relationship, you know, it's not growing, in my opinion. You have to be able to risk being more vulnerable in order for the relationship to grow. And boundaries help you do that. They help you feel safe because you've said, here's my boundary. I can't accept this kind of behavior. But if you're honoring my boundaries and you're trustworthy, I will be more vulnerable with you. So if somebody comes to you and asks you for something, before you say yes, you need to make an evaluation. Because I'm codependent, my inclination is to say yes to people so I can get their approval. But I've learned that I've got, and we talk about this in our groups. In fact, this is a picture of a handout somebody created, and we actually provide these to people. I have one in my wallet, the four key questions to ask before you say yes to somebody. First one is, did they ask for it? Or am I volunteering to help them, which is a codependent behavior, right? I should not be offering to help necessarily unless I've got a very good reason to do it. It's in my codependent nature to try to help people. So I try to learn to let them ask for what they want and need before offering help. Then I need to evaluate, is it necessary? Are they asking me to look after one of their responsibilities, or are they coming to me with a burden? And then I ask, will it be appreciated? Do I feel like I'm being taken advantage of? That's what's at the basis of this question. Is this something I'm going to resent doing because this person comes to me over and over and over again? Or do I feel like it will be appreciated and honored in the right way? Or do I think I'm being used, right? And four, can I afford it? And by affording it, I'm not just talking about money, although I might be, but I'm also talking about emotionally. As we heard in the question earlier, can I afford this request for 4 days together? Maybe I can't emotionally. All I've got to give is one, and then I need to take care of myself after that. Can I afford to give the time? Many of us have more time on our hands now than we had in the past. But even so, time can be a pretty rare commodity, and I need to spend some time on me. So am I giving up time on me to help somebody else? Can I afford to do that? Is it going to take me out of the things that I use to support myself? And can I afford that? Can I afford to be with this person spiritually? Maybe there's something about them that I find extremely draining spiritually. Maybe because the person insists on telling me all about their religion or something like that and trying to convert me. Maybe I can't afford to be with that person spiritually. You know, it's different in every case, but it's really important. Before saying yes, evaluate. Did they ask for it? Is it necessary? Will it be appreciated? Can I afford it? Yeah. So really important things to do before you say yes. And if you need time to evaluate the request, say so. I need to think about that. Can I get back to you tomorrow? Just so you can work through that process of seeing how you feel about it. Don't feel you have to say yes right away. When the committee first asked me if I'd be willing to share, when Sarah first contacted me, I think it was back in September. You know, my mom had passed away in the summer and I realized I needed to take care of myself, that I didn't have anything in my tank. When I give now, I evaluate, is my cup full? Do I have extra in my cup to give away? If my cup isn't full, then I need to fill my cup up first because I'm responsible to me first and my own happiness. So how full is my cup? My cup wasn't very full in September. It wasn't until after Christmas I was able to say, okay, I think I'm now in a space where emotionally, spiritually, I'm ready to give again. And could go ahead. So if you need time to evaluate, say so. But if that person insists they need an answer right away, I would suggest your answer should be no. If they're not willing to let you have the time, they might be just trying to coerce you and manipulate you into saying yes, right? And if you don't have time to think about it, say no. And then you can follow up that by saying, well, you know what? I need to say no if you need to know right now, but if you give me another day to think about it, I may or may not change my mind, but at least I can evaluate it then. All right. And remember, no is a complete sentence. You don't have to, and I would urge you not to try and justify why you're saying no, because that opens the door to somebody else trying to convince you to change your mind. You can say it very politely. You can just say, no thanks, that won't work for me. You're not opening the door at all to any kind of a rebuttal. You're not giving them an excuse that they can try and counter with an argument. You're just saying, it's not going to work for me. And it's really important not to belabor why you're saying no. As somebody who's starting to set boundaries, you often want to justify why you're saying no. Yeah, you just got to take a deep breath and say, no thanks, that won't work for me, and no more. One of the things you need to remember is that when you're free to say no, you're actually free to then say yes, right? If you're in a position where you can't say no, your yes is not an honest yes. It's being coerced out of you. It's not being given freely. But when you're free to say no, you're also free to say yes. And so the yes that you give can be more of a gift, no strings attached. And I would argue this is really the goal of one of the goals of boundaries is to allow you to be safe enough that you're free to say no. So that when you do say yes, it is a gift. It's saying yes, when you're free to say yes, is like your higher power working through you. I don't know how to explain it any differently. There's this tremendous feeling you get from giving freely, but you can't get there if you're coerced into saying yes. If you say yes and you regret it and you wish you'd have said no. And by the way, if you happen to have said yes and you really didn't want to say no and didn't realize it at the time, you can go back later and say to the people, I'm sorry, I know I said yes, but I've been looking at this and I've been feeling like I made a mistake and I need to say no. I am sorry if this is going to cause you a problem, but I am no longer able to do what I had committed to previously. That was a mistake. And it's okay to do that. And again, as I said earlier, any boundary can be relaxed at any point you choose. It's up to you, but I would urge you to make sure that when you're setting boundaries with other people, make sure they're honoring your boundaries before you relax them. Because if you relax them prior to that, you're just teaching them that they don't have to honor your boundary. Okay, I'm going to get through this slide, then we'll take another quick break for a couple of questions. So one of the things I've learned, and I mentioned this before, is when I ask others for help, I allow them to say no. I give them permission usually at the beginning. Feel free to say no. I'd like to ask for your help with something, but feel free to say no. What I need help with is the following. Will that work for you? Right? Allowing people the opportunity to say no and letting them know it's okay to do so somehow makes that conversation safer. And what I've found also is I've become more comfortable with the people who set boundaries with me when I say yes. So when I know a person is a person who's got strong boundaries, and they ask me for a favor, I know they'll honor the fact that I'll say no, and they will respect that because they've shown me that behavior themselves, that they can set boundaries, they can say what they will accept, what they won't accept. They're more honest, and that allows me to be more honest. So one of the things that I have experienced is people who are really weak with their boundaries, I'm less likely to get into deeper relationships with them. And people who have healthier boundaries, I'm more likely to be attracted to them because we can be more honest in the relationship and have a more fruitful relationship as a result. All right. I think we can take a couple more questions now, Tammy.
Alrighty, I believe Raul was next with his question. I'll ask him to unmute.
Hi, I'm Raul, I'm a codependent. We may have met because I visited your group once. I really liked the illustration that you did at the beginning with the passive and assertive and aggressive. I thought that really outlined the different types of boundaries that there are. One question I had was, you know, obviously, when I look at it, I can see that, you know, the three different categories are going to be experiencing certain feelings more than others. And, you know, as a codependent, I can possibly use that as like a barometer to figure out which type of boundary I may be in or what type of situation I may be in. So what, if anything, do you have to add to that? Or has that question come up before?
Thanks for your question, Ro. I know we've talked about that before. Let me just see. Hang on a second. I was just thinking maybe I can share that again if it's still around. I usually do this. it's very common for me to do this drawing and I'm usually referring back to it all the time when I do the interactive sessions. And so it comes up a lot. I'm a terrible drawer. That comes up a lot too. So that passive person, the feelings that I've had there are that feeling of being overwhelmed, that feeling of I do all the giving, but I never get anything back in return. And in fact, it gets to a point where I'm feeling like I'm kicking myself because I've said yes and I wish I'd have said no. And I start getting resentful. So the feelings I experience in that is feeling overwhelmed, feeling resentful, feeling like I'm drowning, feeling like I have to worry about what everybody else is thinking and managing that. And really what I'm doing is I'm trying to suck approval out of other people, right? And it can get so bad that I get angry and I jump over to that aggressive side and I wall myself in. And over there, I start with anger, but it eventually turns to feeling sorry for myself, feeling lonely, feeling like I can't win, feeling like I don't know what the rules are in life, and that despair that when will I ever learn? When will I ever figure this out again? And eventually my loneliness gets strong enough that I end up jumping back over to the passive side and start saying yes to people again. So that's the seesaw a lot of people do, right? And the trick is, it's great that my feeling overwhelmed or my anger takes me from passive to aggressive, because at least there I'm setting a boundary. It's not a very good way to set boundaries, but at least I've set a boundary. If I can figure out how I can go from there to the assertive place, and only let certain people in, only say yes to a couple of requests, right? Close that gate when I need to close the gate. That's what I need to do. So I'm not sure if that answer was particularly helpful, but hopefully it helped so much, Rowan.
Yeah, it did. Absolutely.
Thank you. If you have time for one more question, we have Julie B will be next. I'll ask her to unmute.
Hi, my name is Julie. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Thank you so much. This has been an amazing workshop, and I really appreciate your willingness to be of service. So what I'm noticing in the aftermath, when I create a boundary, the aftermath of the boundary is what gets me into a pickle jar, because usually I start controlling the outcome. So I found that it's best to work step one right after, so I don't have any expectations over that boundary and insanity behind it. But I would like to ask, and I apologize, I'm working from home, so I'm in and out. Have you spoken about internal boundaries? Because in the Code of Blue Book, it doesn't say that much about having internal boundaries. It's like wearing a bulletproof vest in regards to emotions. Can you speak on that? Thank you so much.
Sure. Thanks for the question. I did not put in much on internal boundaries here, simply because of the time available. When my first go through pulling all these slides together, I had a lot more than I could go through in the time available. I'll talk a little bit about internal boundaries. Internal boundaries are like, where are those things within me where I need to set boundaries? Because I'm feeling driven to certain behaviors, certain excesses, laziness, unwilling to do the work to get me where I want to go. I mean, that can often lead to me needing to set boundaries with myself, right? I gave the quick example of, if you look at my background right now, it's a picture of me skiing about a month ago. I love to go cross-country skiing, and I couldn't because my back was so bad. And I realized I was getting to an age where if I didn't change my behavior, I'd be done. I wouldn't ski again for the rest of my life. And that started me on a multi-year path of doing healthy self-care so that I could get my back into better shape, because I wasn't prepared to give up on my dreams. One of the things I haven't mentioned is, if you're codependent like me, we tend either to have dreams and give them up because of other people, or we never set our own dreams and we live in other people's dreams. We let our partner's dreams become our dreams. We don't look at what it is we want and need and what we want to achieve. So when I realized that I wanted to get back skiing, it was part of the exercise of looking at the things I wanted to do for me in my life, right? Now I cross-country ski. I actually fly a glider airplane when there isn't COVID. I learned to ride a motorcycle, which I'd always been afraid of doing. I just looked at the things that I wanted to do in my life and I set myself a goal of doing them. But in doing that, I had to set some boundaries with myself. I have to put the work in to get myself to that place so that I can achieve those goals. And that requires internal boundaries with myself. Because left to my own devices, I became a person who was more and more crippled every year. And felt sorry for myself and wouldn't get off the couch. You know, I had to work through some of that pain to get to a healthier place. And now I have to keep working to maintain it. So I think that's all we can do for questions right now. We're quickly running
out of time.
Thank you. So I'm going to jump back into the presentation. Hopefully that's okay. Again, being codependent, I'm going to apologize that we didn't get to everybody's questions, but doing the best I can with where I'm at. So Tammy, we're just going to jump right back in. Okay. I think we talked about this slide. This is where I ended up. So the next one. So what are the gifts I get from setting boundaries? So it's easier for me to detach with love from other people. My sponsor and I talk about this quite often. It's easier for me to let other people have a bad day, and I don't have to have a bad day too because of them, right? That's an amazing gift I've found, right? Because I used to take on other people's feelings all the time, and I don't have to now. Or at least I'm less inclined to. So I can detach with love and let other people have a bad day. I don't have to fix them. I don't have to commiserate with them. And I mind my own business more. I don't take other people's responsibilities on. So I feel less responsible for them and their choices. And that allows me the time to look after myself better. I overcommit less, which is a good thing. Because I used to overcommit all the time. When my mom got really sick a little over a year ago, I actually stepped down from multiple volunteer positions that I was in. I'm one of those people that when I get involved in something, I tend to jump into the deep end, which is probably a codependent behavior. And I've learned to try and mitigate that to more manageable commitment. When I realized I needed to do some more self-care, I let go of all kinds of commitments so that I could do that. Another gift is I'm less fearful of rejection. I've learned that if I can't be me with somebody else, if that's not good enough for them, then this is the wrong relationship for me. In the past, I used to think if I wasn't good enough for them, how could I change to be better or more acceptable to them? I'd become a chameleon and be the person I thought they wanted me to be. I've realized that I can't be anybody else but me. So I'm trying to discover who that is. But at the same time, if I set a boundary and somebody rejects me, I can just say, you know, my higher power's got my back. I know there's nothing wrong with me. If they're not happy with me the way I am, then this is just the wrong relationship for me at this time. And I don't have to take it personally. And as I said, I do much more self-care now. I've learned that the fastest way to reduce stress in my life is to say no. And to actually find this quote online was great. Because when I said yes all the time, all I did was add more and more stress to my life. Until it became unbearable. When I'm feeling stressed, I need to say no to take care of me. Other gifts from boundaries, and hopefully these will sound familiar to you too. So my new and renewed relationships are all with equal partners. I have a deeper relationship with those who are trustworthy and by that, I mean, I'm trustworthy with my boundaries. I find I accept others more easily, and the process leads to greater self-love. And in turn, I am more aware when I need to set boundaries with people because I value myself more. And the first two points here are from our promises. The promises are such a gift in CODA. They really are a gift to the recovery community as a whole, I think. But that idea of new and renewed partnerships, how do I renew them? How do I make them new with healthy boundaries? And that's where I learned to trust those that are trustworthy. If they honor my boundaries, they become trustworthy. If they don't honor my boundaries, they're not. And I need to get out of that relationship or change the terms of it. And that idea that I can use my boundaries to be more vulnerable allows me to accept others more easily. I'm less threatened by other people because I know I can protect myself, because I know how to set healthy boundaries and look after myself. And I've said it before, and it's just one of those themes that's been going on in my head the last year. Self-esteem is required to set boundaries. Self-love is one of the gifts of recovery. And self-esteem, self-love leads to better boundaries. Boundaries leads to more self-esteem and more self-love. I mean, it's just, they go together in recovery. If you're a person who has no self-esteem, like, keep coming to meetings, get your sponsor, work the steps, see how the group accepts you and loves you for who you are. See how other people's higher power loves them for who they are. Find a higher power for yourself that'll love you for who you are, and start growing that self-love and self-esteem hand in hand with starting to set boundaries to protect yourself. All right. So we have lots of resources in CODA. We have the patterns of codependency that we can use to highlight where we're struggling, where our character defects are. A lot of them are related to boundaries. So if you're trying to understand boundaries more, look at those patterns of self-esteem, especially the compliance and the control patterns. You know, our 12 steps are a great resource. As we're working the 12 steps, some of them will naturally lead to us needing to set better boundaries. But that first step is a great one for realizing I need to stop trying to control other people, but I do have power over my choices. If you've never spent any time with the 12 traditions, there is a resource that I would point out to you. It's called the 12-Piece Relationship Toolkit from CODA. It was a resource that a couple that are on this call helped put together, and it came out through the Experience Strength and Hope group in Saskatoon. And it's a wonderful resource about setting boundaries in relationships, using the 12 traditions as the guide. The traditions are all about boundaries. There's been lots of feedback from different groups that have been using the 12-piece relationship toolkit for workshops, and they found it really, really valuable, and it's really changed relationships with those people because it's all about boundaries. The CODA Blue Book has lots of references to boundaries in it. Use your sponsor. And if you don't have a sponsor yet, find one that models healthy boundaries. It's really the first person I learned to trust was my sponsor. And part of that tied in that was his ability to set healthy boundaries with me that didn't make me feel less than, but made me realize how valuable boundaries were. We do have the CODA Boundary Pamphlet. It's free. It's actually available on the CODA website. You can download it and look at it. And it's full of good stuff. In this moment, Daily Reader, if you go to the index, there's lots of readings on boundaries. And I'd encourage you that you can be your own resource. One of the ways you can do that is by chairing a meeting in your group on boundaries. If you're struggling with a particular issue with boundaries, bring that to your meeting. Volunteer to chair and have the topic for your meeting on that subject. Talk about your own experience, strength, and hope in your sharing, and then just hear what feedback you get from other people on that. And that can be really helpful as well. We found this approach to be really good. We tell our sponsees, we tell newcomers at the meetings once they've been around for a little bit, and we think they're ready to start chairing a meeting. Next time you're struggling with a topic, chair a meeting on that topic. And it produces great results. All right. Well, I can't believe the time has gone by so quickly. I'm grateful to all of you to be here and to allow me this opportunity to do this. I think we've got about 10 minutes left in the session. I know there's some cleanup stuff, but I'm going to turn it back to Tammy in a second so that we can take a few more questions. I've put my contact information there, so I do that. I break my own anonymity so that other people can find me. If you have a group that's interested in some of this material, then I can make that available for you. I've also got, Tammy, earlier I provided the committee with a couple of handouts. I don't know if you have them available or if I need to download them again for you. They are actually artwork. I did this workshop in Winnipeg, Manitoba a few years back. One of the people in the workshop was an artist, and she took her notes by essentially creating artwork. And then as a thank you gift to me, they framed the artwork and sent it back to me. And right now I can't tell if that's what I'm sharing. So I'm going to try this. Oh, okay. I was, eh? and this is a summary. There's two parts to it. There's this one, and this one, and I'll make these available for people. I'll put them in the chat. I'll also email them, to the committee again so that they can be available for you guys. But for me, they put a smile on my face. I'm really grateful that this person created these and was willing to share them and allow me to hand them out to others. So as part of my gift to you for being here and participating in this, I'm very happy to give you these so that hopefully you have takeaways that will help you with your boundaries and to remember what we covered today in the future when you need it. So I'll put these in the chat, but I'll also take some more questions now.
Great. Thank you. I do not have those yet, and I would love, I should probably frame them. a couple of things. We will have another all chat at the end, so you'll be able to chat with each other. And let's see, a note from Sarah will be coming up at our seventh tradition. But right now we have a question from Dimitri. So Dimitri, would you please unmute yourself?
Thank you, Tammy. Thank you so much for everyone doing service for this meeting. And Ian, thank you so much for a wonderful workshop. I'm very grateful to have been part of this. And my question was, I struggle to be honest about my motives. You mentioned earlier on that, you know, one should question one's motives when one is, you know, if I want to help someone or, you know, I always believe that my motives are honorable. But clearly, I'm maybe possibly fooling myself at times and how can one be, any thoughts on, digging deep and questioning one's motives. Perhaps you have some thoughts on that. Thank you. Thank you once again for the opportunity.
My best advice, recognizing this is advice, my best experience, let me put it that way, is talk to your sponsor first. Go over the situation with your sponsor and tell them you're questioning your motives. Right. It takes a lot of self-awareness and self-honesty to understand your motives. And as codependents, we are great at convincing ourselves we're doing the right thing for the right reasons. That's the nature of our disease. So it can take a lot of honest thinking, honest reflection. But if you've got a sponsor, go to your sponsor. Tell them exactly what you're thinking of and, you know, ask them what they think your motives are, whether you think they're legitimate or not. I had that very same conversation with a sponsee once who told me, and this is a person who had a fair bit of money, he wanted to help a family that was a single mom with a couple of kids with some financial help. And we talked about it. And the more I talked about it with him, I kept asking him, so what do you expect in return? What do you hope to get from this? And he'd say a little bit and I'd ask him again. So what would cause you to be resentful, after you've given this person the money? Or are you okay if they do nothing? Right? Having those kind of questions asked, how will you feel if they do nothing, even if they don't say thank you, may be a good way to start uncovering whether you're resentful or not.
Thank you.
I'm going to say I'm trying to post these files in the chat, but there's something going on in Zoom, and it seems to me like I keep posting them to individuals as opposed to everybody. So I apologize if a couple of individuals got files, and everybody got the files, let me know. If you didn't, then I'll try posting them again in a few minutes. Tammy, another question?
Yes, try the drop down where it says two, and then it'll say a name, and there'll be a drop down with a small arrow, and then you'll get a chance to choose everybody.
Yeah, I think what's happening is people are posting to me, and before I can actually put the file in there, it changes the everyone to the individual who's posting to me.
Right. Yeah, you gotta learn to play the piano here. Okay. So our next question is from Jolene. Jolene S., if she's still on here.
Yes, good evening. This is Jolene, codependent from Holland. It's very late over here, but I was having this question and enjoying listening to this beautiful talk, and I learned a lot. So thank you for that. And I'm new in the codependency program. I worked in another program, did step work twice. And I have a question about something what happened last weekend. So I wrote it down to, because I also, I find it sometimes difficult because my language is Dutch, and then English is sometimes difficult to keep it simple in the question. So I wrote it down, my question. Asking for help is my responsibility. It's scared. And of course I feel abandoned. I feel fear of abandonment and rejection. I'm new in the program and started my first step with a group of women, which also has a WhatsApp group. I did step work before, and the CODA program is going much deeper to my roots. I started writing step one, and I was in need of support, so I reached out. I find it difficult to reach out, but I know it's my responsibility, so I reach out to someone in the program because I haven't got a sponsor yet. And she didn't answer, and I know I can't expect people to be available all the time. So I reached out in the WhatsApp group. And only a newcomer responded. And so now this is what it's all about. I feel unsafe because I'm writing this, I'm committing myself to doing step work. I'm opening up for step one. And I feel unsafe because nobody responded in the WhatsApp group, and it's a very big women's group. What may I expect? Personally, I feel a boundary, and that this is not okay. And also I learned in another program that it's important to be of service, to be willing. But I also now see in the CODA program that it's a lot about boundaries, so it's a little bit different. And I'm scared to communicate this because I'm new and maybe I'm unreasonable and depending too much. And I haven't got a support group yet in CODA. How to deal with this in a healthy way? Thank you.
Thanks for your question, Jolene. There's lots there. So sometimes these things happen in CODA. Like, we can't control how people are going to respond to us. and it's hard not to take it personally. What I try to, and I've heard this kind of thing many times before, what I try to remind people is that a CODA group, by definition, is a bunch of unhealthy people who are getting together in recovery, right? We are a codependent. We struggle. Codependents rarely, in my experience, want to sponsor people, especially if they haven't been in program very long. We feel very afraid about ruining somebody else's life because we say the wrong thing. So it's in our nature to struggle to volunteer sometimes, especially for sponsorship. What I'd encourage you to do, there's a couple of things. I don't know if the groups you're going to have a group conscience meeting, but one of the things we learned to do in our group after a group conscience meeting was we had a phone list, a contact list, and we asked people who are willing to be temporary sponsors to put an asterisk by their name on the phone list. Now in our Zoom meetings, we're asking people to put a star in front of their name on Zoom if they're willing to be temporary sponsors. So that makes it a little bit easier for people who are finding sponsors to find those who are willing to sponsor them. So if you know any of the people in your group that have been around for a while, ask them if they ever have group conscience meetings. Ask them if it would be possible to suggest to the group that if you're going to be online, put a star in front of your name if you're willing to be a temporary sponsor. Then you're no longer saying, I'm needing somebody to help me find a sponsor. You're just saying, what can we do as a group that will make it easier for us to connect with each other in sponsorship? I don't know if that's helpful, but that's one thing that comes to mind. And if you can't find a sponsor in that group, I would suggest you might want to look for some other groups. One that might be a little healthier. One where there might be more people that have been around for a while. There's nothing wrong. In Saskatoon, the CODA group, when I started there, there were four crazy women and one crazy guy when I walked in the door. And that crazy guy is laughing in the background. I can see him there right now. and we just realized that we didn't have what we needed to help with sponsorship. He and I co-sponsored each other. And we often recommended other people go to other 12-step programs that were applicable and look for sponsors there until we could develop people that were far enough along in recovery that they could be effective sponsors. So yes. It's in the CODA literature that it's okay to find somebody and ask them to be a co-sponsor. It's okay yes. If you can't find a sponsor to go somewhere else and try and find a sponsor at least temporarily.
Yes, maybe I was not clear. I have a co-sponsor. The thing is, there's a 9-hour difference, so she's not always there.
it's
more like the women's group, like very experienced CODA members started this group. And the whole idea is doing the step work, going through the step in this closed women's group in half a year or something. And I was just surprised that nobody answered when I was in very big need of support. So then it's for me already a big step to ask for support. And then where you shared about the fear of abandonment and the rejection, yeah, of course that all happens.
Yeah.
Yes.
The other thing you can do is ask if sometime you guys could have a meeting on sponsorship and get people talking about it. Then you'd have yes. an opportunity to share.
Yes, thank you very much. Very clear your answer. Have a nice evening. Day. It's day, yeah. Bye.
Bye, thanks. Tammy, how are we doing for time?
It is 3:35 right now. Would you like to take one more question or would you like to end and then do your Q&A afterwards?
I would suggest that we try to honor the boundary that was set with the beginning and end times, and I'm happy to stick around and answer questions for a little while afterwards.
All right, perfect. All right. So, reminding you again, there will be an all chat, an open chat at the end. And Ian, we want to thank you for your experience, strength, and hope. Especially hope. My hope is that when I get healthy, I will start to attract better and healthier relationships. All my relationships will improve. In fact, everything will improve in the future if I am working this work now. Thank you so much. And now a word from Sarah, and we will have our seventh tradition information onto the screen. Let me have Sarah unmute herself.
I'm Sarah, codependent. Thanks, Raul. I just wanted to announce that the CODA Literature Committee, there's a little slide, opportunities for service, help write CODA literature. We're working on some new literature, a new daily meditation reader, which includes a CODA quote and 100 to 200 words. And also, there's going to be a new storybook. So if you'd like to write your CODA story in 900 to 4,000 words, you can send these to literature@coda.org. And that would be very great. There's the slide, literature@coda.org, or you can text or call me at 520-343-3090. Thank you.
Thank you, Sarah. And now, Ian will share the 12 promises with us.
I'll just have to pull them out.
Let's see. Raul, do you have our slide?
Yeah, let me grab it.
Okay, all right. I can expect a miraculous change in my life by working the program of Codependence Anonymous. As I make an honest effort to work the 12 steps and follow the 12 traditions, I know a new sense of belonging. The feelings of emptiness and loneliness will disappear. I am no longer controlled by my fears. I overcome my fears and act with courage, integrity, and dignity. I know a new freedom. I release myself from worry, guilt, regret about my past and present, and I'm aware enough not to repeat it. I know a new love and acceptance of myself and others. I feel genuinely lovable, loving, and loved. I learn to see myself as equal to others. My new and renewed relationships are all with equal partners. I am capable of developing and maintaining healthy and loving relationships. The need to control and manipulate others will disappear as I learn to trust those who are trustworthy. I learn that it is possible for me to mend, to become more loving, intimate, and supportive. I have the choice of communication with my family in a way which is safe for me and respectful of them. I acknowledge that I am a unique and precious creation. I no longer need to rely solely on others to provide my sense of worth. I trust the guidance I receive from my higher power and come to believe in my own capabilities. And I gradually experience serenity, strength, and spiritual growth in my daily life.
Thank you, Ian. And now we can see how it can be done. I am reminded that I have forgotten the seventh tradition here. We have flashed a slide, and we will put it up again. Tradition 7, every CODA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. And so with contributions at these sites, we'll be able to put on more workshops like this to bring more experience, strength, and hope, and reach out to other codependents. Thank you. Let us close with the CODA closing prayer. Please follow along with me. We thank our higher power for all that we have received from this meeting. As we close, may we take with us the wisdom, love, acceptance, and hope of recovery. And now the serenity prayer. We have a tradition in our group where we join hands across the screens. So if you'd like. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Keep coming back. It works if you work it, and you got to work it every day because you're worth it. Thank you.
Tammy, thank you again, Ian.
Say again?
Are you going to call who's next on questions?
Yes. Next.
And I will enable the chat with each other too.
Perfect. Chat is open. And Crystal in Buffalo is next.
Hi. Thank you so much, Ian. On one of the slides, there was something like you ask yourself those four questions before you say yes. I noticed the first question was like, did they ask? And I am like the super helpful trying to like, I have to know one of my struggles is I feel that I have to have all the knowledge to keep myself safe. And I assume that other people would love to have that knowledge too. And so one of my struggles is I think that I am being so loving by just, you know, constantly telling people things that I think, would help. So, but they don't ask, definitely, but I mean, does that mean we can't ever offer things? Also, sometimes I have things like, something that was given to me that I don't need and I want to know who wants it. And I mean, how else would I do that other than saying like, do you want this? You know, so anyway, so I just wondered like, how does offering, I would assume that's a healthy thing. I have trouble with knowing like when it's healthy, I mean, I know unsolicited advice is not, but like, you know, I have trouble knowing like, so how does offering fit in to boundaries? Thank you.
So I think this gets back to that slide where we were talking about motives, right? If you can understand what's behind your motive to offer this person something, and how you will feel if they accept it and never say anything back, or if they reject your offer, that's something you've got to examine in yourself to see what your motives are when you're offering somebody something. So as a codependent, we tend to want to, just the nature of our disease, hook into other people by being helpful, right? We like to take care of everybody else in any way we can, because we want that approval from those people. So if you can be aware that I might be doing this for approval, then that's not a healthy thing to do. I'd also suggest that if you're struggling and you don't know, you can talk to your sponsor about it. And if your sponsor isn't around, I would suggest you assume, if you're early in recovery and you're struggling with this, always assume your motives aren't clear. that they might be based on your codependency. So then when you have something to give away, give it away to Goodwill instead of an individual, right? You're still helping, but obviously in that scenario, you're not going to get anything back. You're not going to be manipulating somebody else to get a positive feedback, to get that shot of approval that we are often going for that we don't realize when we're trying to be helpful to other people. So it does take a lot of work on recovery to really figure out whether your disease is fooling you or not. But if you're early in recovery, I would suggest assume it's your codependency and then think, okay, if I want to do these things, is there another way I can do it so that there are no strings attached when I try to offer? I don't know if this is wisdom in recovery or if this is wisdom from age or what. As I get older, my mouth opens far less frequently than it used to. It just seems to be that it's okay to wait for other people to ask, right? If you need to let other people know that you're willing to help, but you're going to wait for them to ask, at some point when it's appropriate, that's kind of like setting a boundary with them. It's like saying, I am willing to consider your request for help, but just be aware that I'm going to wait for you to ask me. I'm going to be trying to back off of this offering all the time to help you. And I will try to wait for you to help me. And by the way, if you find me continuously asking you if you need help with something, feel free to remind me about this conversation when that happens, because I'm not really intending to behave that way anymore in the future. I don't know if that's helpful or not, but that's what I would suggest.
Wow, that's so helpful. Thank you very much.
All right, I believe we have Svetla next. I'll ask you to unmute.
Hello, I'm Svetla. I'm codependent. You gave very good example of envy and boundaries, and then you measured that 30 word laziness and connection with boundaries. And I was like, oh, what? Could you please give a few examples, some a bit more about the connection with laziness and boundaries?
Sure, I'd be happy to. Thank you. Thanks for the question.
Thank you.
I have certainly found with me that I have perfectionist characteristics that don't help me sometimes, or any other time. I also have found that sometimes I'm not willing to put in the effort to take care of myself and to do what's required. So the example I was using before was taking care of my back requires me to go to a chiropractor regularly, requires me to do a set of exercises for about 10, 15 minutes every morning. And I don't always get to bed early, so I don't always have a lot of time in the morning because I try to sleep in. You know, there's a lot of things in my life that unless I set boundaries with myself, they just accumulate because it's easier for me to leave them than it is to take care of them. If you went into my kitchen right now, you would find 2 or 3 days worth of dishes, to be honest. I am trying to get my son to help me with those dishes. But I also have to admit that some of the fact that they're there is because I'm lazy and I haven't been getting to them myself. It's not my favorite thing to do. So just by my nature, I don't always do a good job taking care of the things I should. And I need to tell myself that if I want to live in a clean house, if I want to make sure I don't have bugs in the spring and when spring comes here, that I've got to keep doing my housework, keep up with those menial tasks that I don't find all that rewarding, because they just need to be done because they're my responsibility. And sometimes I talk to my sponsor about that kind of stuff too, because I know I'm prone to that as a defect of character. I can be lazy. So it's about being honest about it and admitting it. And the more you talk to others about it, maybe the more you'll be motivated. One of the things I've learned to do lately that I found really helpful is I actually listen to spiritual podcasts now when I clean my house. I have found a couple of podcasts that are teaching me things that I would really like to know. I feel like I never have time for them. And suddenly I discovered that if I'm listening to them while I'm doing housework, the housework gets done and I'm also doing self-care at the same time. So I don't know if that's helpful, but that's what I've got.
Thank you. We have Karen and is it Richard next?
Hi guys, sorry my beloved is running a mixer in the background here. Ian, a great job as always. I want you to know we laughed hysterically when you talked about perfectionist tendencies. There's a couple things that I'd like to hear you comment further on. One is that idea that, you know, we can't set a boundary and look after someone else's feelings at the same time, and that when we set a boundary, the difficult people in our lives will almost always push back. And cultivating tools like the broken record technique for dealing with that pushback. But before that, I'd like you to comment on that. The idea of internal boundaries came up. And the idea that at the end of the day, every boundary is an internal boundary. So I'm going to shut up and listen.
Thanks, Richard. By the way, Richard is my co-sponsor in CODA. He was the one crazy guy in the room when I showed up who was desperately happy because some other guy finally showed up in the room. We've been doing this CODA thing together since 2003. So thanks for your question, Richard. And I don't know if you're trying hard to put me on the spot or not, but good questions.
I recognize that voice. I recognize that voice from a CD.
And by the way, Richard and his beloved were, you can't see this very well, were the people who put in the time and the effort to pull together the 12-piece relationship toolkit. So there. The one question that most clearly sticks in my mind that you asked, because you asked several, was the last one is, aren't all boundaries internal boundaries? Well, yeah, because they're there to protect us. It's about me doing something for me to help me feel safe. Whether it's me making a personal boundary that I'm going to stop gossiping. So I've set a boundary with myself that I'm going to stop doing that. I'm going to tell my sponsor that I'm setting that boundary with myself. And if he sees me doing that, I ask him to call me on it. That's an internal boundary, obviously, by making it public to others so they can help me with the enforcing of it. Whether I'm setting a boundary to tell somebody that, you know, like my mom, that talking about my ex-wife is not something I'm prepared to do on our calls, even though I'm setting a boundary with somebody else, the reason I'm doing that is to protect me. I don't want to, I mean, that person is still the mother of my kids. I don't want to fall into a place where I'm thinking poorly or talking negatively about my ex-wife because she's still my kids' parents and I need to honor that for my kids. So for my own integrity, I set this boundary with the outside person so I'm not tempted to go somewhere where I know I don't want to go, right? If it's setting a boundary with an angry person, I learned this lesson at work the other day and I didn't realize it. I ran into a problem at work where there was a person I was working with who doesn't work in the office, but a person who's very angry and uses his anger to control other people. Now, I've been in that office for a lot of years. That guy's been there the whole time. Much more senior people than me have put up with this guy's anger. And I was taught that it was acceptable behavior, right? Because of the modeling of the more senior people than me at the company. well, this person in a meeting this fall kind of went off the deep end again and was using anger to control people. And I was totally shut down. Somebody new in the company I was talking to afterwards said, how is that acceptable behavior? Why is it that that person is allowed to talk to us that way? That seems totally inappropriate. And what I realized was I had been conditioned in that case not to set a boundary because I didn't think the boundary would be honored, because other people showed me that they weren't prepared to set boundaries. So I just went along with it. But it took that new person to point out to me that the behavior was unacceptable, you know, and I realized it too. And I was able to go into our HR department. This other person actually raised a complaint against the person, but I was able to go into the HR department as well after I'd realized that I'd accepted this unacceptable behavior, so that I could also protect myself, but also protect the people who work for me, because nobody should be exposed to bullying like that. It should not be acceptable. So setting those internal boundaries are all about what's going on inside of me that I need to protect, right? They're really all internal boundaries, as you said, Richard. I'm not going to try to answer any more questions of yours, Richard. I'm going to let somebody else ask a question. I'm setting a boundary with you.
All right. Thank you. We have this phone number up here. I will ask you to unmute yourself and introduce yourself by your first name.
And the phone number is?
1-585-957-6372. I believe they're on.
Hi. Since my phone number is just announced, thank you for taking my question. Thank you to Ian for the excellent presentation and to those who organized this for your service. Just so you are aware that when the person is just calling in and not on Zoom, when you indicate you raise your hand by pressing *9, it does let the person know that the moderators have acknowledged you, and so the person will know that. Since the phone number was just announced, I am a codependent and can identify with what was said about someone being really happy when a male walked into a room. I'm the person to be really happy if there's a Jew out there who wants to talk to another Jew who is working the steps. And my phone number is area code 585-957-6372, a Jew or an Israeli. And thank you. Thank you so much for your excellent presentation, for acknowledging me, and for announcing my phone number in case the system didn't let me know you were acknowledging me. I'm going to go on mute.
Thank you very much. And we have Julie B. back with us. Julie B., I will ask you to unmute yourself for your question.
Hi. Thank you so much for your awesome service. And thank you so much, Ian. Like, once again, this workshop is like the golden nugget in my recovery toolbox. And I wanted to give an example of how I created an internal boundary when I went home to my family of origin, who are not in recovery. And I choose to have a relationship with them. So we were at the holiday dinner table, and my sister, my niece, and my mother were going back and forth, and I was looking like a ping pong match with my head going back and forth, and I kept my mouth shut. I allowed them to be them because I used to participate in that back and forth. So I was able to create an internal boundary by using silence is golden, and I didn't have to do what they were doing, was going back and forth on perfectionism, trying to control each other's opinions. And it felt really, and I used to be with them. And so the internal boundary that I kept was the serenity prayer, and I was able to enjoy my dinner. So is that an example of an internal boundary? Thank you.
Sorry, Julie, I feel like if there was a question in there, I missed your question for me because I was chatting back and forth, talking about how we were going to wrap this up. So I apologize.
Oh, that's okay. I was seeking validation. I was saying, is that a good example of an internal boundary where family members are acting out and where I'm just observing and not participating? And to be okay, and they didn't know any different, you know? So I was just given an example and just was wondering what your opinion was. That's it.
Yeah, thank you for repeating the question. I think that's a great example. One of the things I didn't talk about today was the drama triangle. And for those of you who are aware of the drama triangle, which sounds a little bit like what was going on, maybe, Julie, the drama triangle has a persecutor, a victim, and a rescuer, and how in our relationships, we often can play one of those roles, and that the best way to get away from that problem is to just stop playing the game. So to get off the triangle altogether, to just keep your mouth shut. So yeah, by not participating, you're not telling others how they have to behave, but you're at least showing what healthy behavior looks like. And if somebody calls you on it, it's okay to say, you know what, for me to participate in this, it wouldn't be healthy for me. So I'm just going to decide to keep my mouth shut because I think that's the healthiest thing I can do for me. So yeah, I think that was great, Julie.
And peace arrived. Thank you.
Okay, Tammy.
All right. Thank you, everyone. Thank you so much for coming, joining. I have responded to several people and have not put on the whole chat. I wonder if, Sarah, would you put on the whole chat that this recording, it's an audio recording only, will be available soon on the CODATucson.org website. And I know I'm going to have to listen to it again too because of administrative things. So, yeah. And if and when we get the PowerPoint and those wonderful pictures from Ian, we will make those available somehow as well. So CODATucson.org. And thank you everyone for attending and making this a very successful, very informative and health bringing workshop to all of us. So we'll be signing off soon and everyone stay safe. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Fantastic seminar. One of the best I've heard in years.